Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to start out the show with my friend Nancy Rink, who is going to come on and talk about her latest book and her latest quilt projects. So, Nancy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Pat.
I am so excited. It was so fun to catch up with you a couple months ago.
Yes, I think we saw each other at Quilt Market.
Yes, yes. It was always fun to say hi. So I got to see your things in your booth, and you told me about the new book, El Camino Real. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, El Camino Real, I wrote with my husband, Oliver. He's a retired history professor. Mm-hmm. So he does the history, and I do the quilts.
So I think the book... That's so great. I think that's so great that you have like this, you know, combo book. This isn't the first one that you've done like that.
No, this is the second one. So we did it before and it worked. So we thought we'd try it again, and well, we still worked together fine. So
now, tell me, what's absolutely just amazing about your book, Nancy, is the photography and the history lesson. I mean, you have this glorious beginning in the front with all of the pictures of the missions and the story. So tell me a little bit about why you chose this story to do this book.
Well, part of the story, my husband wanted to do a book that had to do with California history, and then it turned out we were doing a family history at the same time and discovered that my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was one of 23 leathered cavalrymen who traveled with Father Junipero Serra on the Portola expedition that established the mission system in California. So it was just this, you know, a happenstance connection that we had to California history. So it was sort of fun to do the family history and learn about that and learn about the mission system in California.
Now, did you take the photography or did your husband take it?
No, that was Kansas City Star flew out their photographer, Aaron, and he is just an amazing photographer. He did all the photography work from 9 a.m. to noon. So
goodness.
A space of 3 hours, he shot all those photos.
Oh, they're just glorious because you have the quilts in one of the missions. Which mission is it that you have shown here?
It's Mission La Purisima in Lompoc, California. And we chose that because it's the most historically accurate. It was restored in the 1930s with the WPA project.
Well, that's just a wealth of information. It's like we get a quilt pattern and we get the whole history. now, when you come up with the story, you and Oliver, and then your job is to design quilts to and fabric to go with this, right?
Yes.
So do you do the quilts first and then design fabric to fit it, or how does that work for you?
On that project, I sort of did it simultaneously. I had an idea of the quilt I wanted for the feature quilt, and I wanted it to have echoes of the Spanish and Mexican pottery and Spanish tiles that are found everywhere through California. So I pulled from patterns that I had in my own pottery collection and just, you know, sort of incorporated those onto fabric.
That's a good idea. And you have one that's the stripe, which really looks like the blankets.
Yes. You had to have the serape stripe because that right. Just sort of screams, you know, California.
Well, I'm glad you used the proper word because, you know, I didn't research that in advance. And I am like a Northeast girl. So that's just not my vocabulary. That really, you used it throughout, so it's a great accent. And on the feature quilt, which is the pottery and flowers, there's a really nice outer border print that looks like tile work.
And again, that was came from a piece of embroidered fabric that I had. So it was an antique sort of bodice to a authentic historic dress. Mm-hmm. So it's not like an exact reproduction of that. I just sort of, you know, I used it as an inspiration and then drew the design.
Mm-hmm. Now, inside the book also you have not just, you know, talking about the history, but you have some people featured that you research. Can you tell me a little bit about one of the other aspects of the book?
Well, I can tell you a little because my husband did all the history. So,
yeah.
one of the people we looked at was Father Junipero Serra. So mm-hmm. he was the Franciscan that traveled through the state and developed the mission system. But then we also have, like I featured my great-grandmother in there. We've got a picture of her wedding day and her wedding dress.
Oh.
Yeah. Since, you know, I wanted to have that sort of personal family connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
did you have to book like photography time in the mission?
Yes. As a matter mm-hmm. of fact, when we called them, they gave us a very specific date because mm-hmm. in California, I think it's fourth or fifth grade, all the students learn about the mission system. Mm-hmm. So they gave us a specific date because after that date, she said they were going to have 1,500 school kids through there every week till the end of school. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, we needed to have it clear. We couldn't have all those little kids running around and doing that photography.
No extra people in the photos for that day, right?
Yeah,
oh
no photo bombing.
No photo bombing. Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is just a beautiful book. Do you have one quilt in here that's for you is sort of special?
Probably the one that I did in honor of my great-grandmother. It's called For Rosa. Mm-hmm. She loved a garden, and she, in fact, my aunt, that the wedding dress that she's photographed in, mm-hmm. my aunt still has the bodice to that dress that we've saved all these years. And then we found out that Rosa had made a pillowcase for a baby that died in the family mm-hmm. out of the skirt. And that was found by one of my cousins when she was going through her mother's things, and it had a note on it that was made by Rosa for the baby that died.
Oh my goodness. So that dress has a lot of history to it.
Yeah.
Neat. Oh, neat. Oh, now you have a lot of applique, which
yes.
I personally love. What's type of applique do you like to do?
Usually I like to do freezer paper and starch is my favorite method. Mm-hmm. But I've been trying some new stuff lately because there's a lot of new products on the market.
So yeah, it is fun to try, isn't it? Because, you know, we get to do one thing, but then, you know, sometimes somebody just emailed me today about some new starch product that's being shown around. They were like, did you try this yet? And I'm like, okay, something new to try. That's
exactly.
So how long have you been appliquing?
Well, actually, my very first quilt I ever made was an applique quilt because I didn't know any better.
And you kept quilting. That's good.
And
I
kept
that.
Quilting.
Now, if somebody tells you they think applique is hard, what do you say?
Well, I always tell them it's really no harder than piecework because it's more portable. For me, that's what I like. You can take it anywhere with you. You don't have to sit in front of a sewing machine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I sort of tell them it's like being a professional painter. It's all in the prep work. If you mm-hmm. do the prep work correctly, then the applique is easy.
This is true. This is true. Yep, I know. It just takes a little practice. I mean, everybody who has pieced a while, they forget what it's like to first learn because we weren't good at it when we first learned.
Yeah.
Takes a while. So tell me about your newest project you have going on. You have a block of the month.
Yes. In fact, I have two blocks of the month coming out with Marcus. So they're launching, I think they're sort of launching right now. So they're supposed to kick off September. So shops are getting their fabric and their shop kits right now. One is very modern. It's called Color Love. And it's a medallion style quilt, and it's got two options. So I did a pieced version, and then I did one that has some applique in the middle. So I dropped out some of the piece blocks and put some applique in there for the appliqueers.
Yay.
Yay. And then the other one is called Millworks, and it's a very traditional fabric line, also called Millworks. And I got to work with the American Textile History Museum from their swatches developing that collection.
That must be fun.
Yes. Fun and overwhelming.
Overwhelming, yes. Oh, my goodness. Do you go in with like a little bit of a vision of what you're looking for?
Well, you don't actually get to go into the museum.
Oh.
So, because that would probably be truly overwhelming. So you work with a curator and you sort of send them a list. Like you might say, I want, you know, small paisleys and some plaids, or, you know, and you give them a time period that you're looking at. And then they send you these images, and then you just sort of have to pare it down because,
Yeah, that would be overwhelming. So, Nancy, before we wrap up, I just wanted to touch on one little thing. It's not a fun thing because you've been on the bad end of some quilts being stolen, some of your quilts being stolen in the past. And I was wondering if you can give people a little bit of advice on, you and I talked a little bit about documenting your pieces, because that's been critical for you personally in this, you know, an event. What can you tell people?
Well, number one, label your quilts. I know it seems like, you know, a simple thing, but I know a lot of people don't do it. And you can't just put made by grandma. You know, that doesn't really identify your quilt.
Right, right.
So, you know, have your name, dates, your address, or your city, you know, the city it was made in. I photograph all my quilts. So just the more photos you have, the better.
Yeah.
And just, you know, keep that, all those records.
Keep them together.
Sort of centralized, like, you know, a notebook, a binder, a drawer, or something where you can get your hands on it when you need it.
Nancy, that is excellent information. And I wish you so much luck with your new projects. They are just incredible.
Thank you.
Now, you can visit Nancy out at nancyrinkdesigns.com, where she blogs and she has all of her projects that she's talking about today. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan. So take Nancy's advice and be sure you label and photograph those quilts. So next up, yay, I'm so excited. Latifa Safir is here, and she has been sharing her work out on her site called The Quilt Engineer. I just love her designs. They just make me happy. They are so lively and just, I'm just so excited. So Latifa is here and she's going to talk to us about her work and what's going on and what's new, and hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me on today.
You know, you, besides being having the fun name of the Quilt Engineer, you actually are an engineer. And I have to tell you, I'm supremely impressed that, you know, you actually started getting serious, as you wrote, about your sewing when you were 12. It's like...
Absolutely, I am. I'm a mechanical engineer by training, and I worked in technology for a number of years. And my mom showed me how to the basics at like six, and I'm second eldest of seven kids. Mm-hmm. And so we realized that in order to have our own clothes, we had to make our own. So my sister and I dove in. I was about 11 or 12 years old, and I've been sewing ever since.
Yeah, I just love the word that you were serious about it. It's like, this is your job.
Yeah, I was that was the kind of kid I was.
Yeah. I could just tell by reading that. It was like, my husband is an engineer, so I'm always, you know, and my dad, and, you know, and on. So when you do your work, now, when I look at your work, it's got glorious curves. You have loads of curves and angles and asymmetrical pieces, but there's also... being an engineer, you probably approach it in a way that's fairly structured. Is that true?
It's somewhat true. I have the blessing as an engineer to be very left right brain balanced, which a lot of engineers I don't think necessarily have. So I'm always drawn by a strong creative pull, but I have that engineering structure behind me. So the engineering side of me is more about how things fit together and how you know, how to construct things in a simpler way, just figuring out the mechanics of things. It's kind of how my engineering side comes out. I care lots about craftsmanship, and so it falls into place in that as well. But I'm not afraid of not cutting a straight line necessarily if that's not what the creation calls for. Unlike some engineers that have a problem with that.
Right, right. Your bridge would have like an exit ramp like in the middle somewhere. So.
Exactly.
Now, tell me, you have this great philosophy, so I want you to share it with me about tackling difficult work, because, you know, just as you said, if it deems, you know, a chopped off corner, you're going to go for it. How do you, what do you tell people?
Yeah, so when we started quilting, my sister and I, we really have this fearless attitude about learning how to sew, and we have this like philosophy. It wasn't really formalized at the time, but in retrospect, I saw that's what it was, that nothing's ever difficult to sew if you take it one stitch at a time. And so at that time, that meant we were trying Vogue patterns at 12 and 13 years old. and it just makes you kind of fearless and not afraid to, like, okay, it's just, we're putting in a zipper, but, you know, it's just one stitch at a time. So if you take it slow and do it, you can make it. And I think that gives me the freedom to not be afraid to try more complicated techniques. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about it this morning as I was preparing to be on the show with you. Mm-hmm. I think when someone says something is difficult, then that actually makes me want to try it, because I'm like, oh, it can't be that bad. So, and that's kind of how I fell into exploring curves as well, you know, because a lot of people do have that fear for putting two curved pieces together and sewing them. And I just kind of dove in with the curves that way as well.
So we'll do a little curve talk now. So what was the first curves that you decided to tackle?
You know what? I think I learned Sharon Chandler and Del Fleming have similar techniques. Sharon's, of course, is called Piece Laque, and Del Fleming, which is the technique I was first presented with, was Del's, which is online. You'll see it as the 6-minute circle. She calls it pinless piecing in her book. And that was it was a way to sew curves where you didn't necessarily have to just put two pieces of fabric together and sew them. So it uses freezer paper and glue stick or just the inward glue with the glue tip. And that was the very first curve that I tried to sew together. So I'm like, okay, we can achieve the effect of the curve and not necessarily sew the curve directly. And from there, I've explored many, many different ways to sew curves together.
I showed... the little collage that I do has your clamshell, which, you know, I'm totally coveting since the very second I saw it online way back, because that's one of those sort of quilts on my list. I'm a quilter. I think I want to have a clamshell quilt someday.
Right.
And I've not made any attempt towards that. At all.
We can change that.
So tell me a little bit about what a clamshell quilt is. It's a very old quilt pattern.
It is. It's a very old quilt pattern. It's made by the intersection of three circles. And it creates a repeating pattern, this repeating clamshell pattern. Traditionally, it's hand-pieced. And being kind of the modern woman, I don't have a ton of time. And I don't personally enjoy the hand sewing process. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted a clamshell quilt. So I thought, if I blew the clamshell up, then we can piece curves. And so I blew it up to 8 inches and also to 12 inches. And my first two clamshell quilts, which I call Glam Clam. So if anyone wants to download it, it's free on Craftsy. Just Google Glam Clam and you'll come up with the Craftsy page. Mm-hmm. But when my first two, I started using all these pins, and you'll see in the pattern, the way it's written, you have to alternate. I'm all about shortcuts. You have to alternate mm-hmm. every other clam in order to pin it in and mm-hmm. all of this convoluted stuff. And as I was sewing it, I started learning about how it could go together without pins at all. So I developed sort of a technique or approach to sewing it without pins. Mm-hmm. And I also don't iron my clamshell quilt until the very end as well. We do a bit of finger pressing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a YouTube video that shows you how to do that as well. So I'm all about creating, you know, great high-impact quilts, but using techniques that allow for shortcuts while still maintaining craftsmanship.
Now, one of the things that I want to just explore this clamshell one sure. more level, because for me, what I've never been able to really sort of grasp, get my head around, was how to keep it straight. I feel like I'll go on an angle, which might be okay, but I might want it straight, because when I look at yours, you know, they're all lined up like they should be.
It looks that way. No, I'm just joking. No, they're all lined up. So I actually built little tabs into the template so that instead of having to start at the beginning of the curve and at the end of the curve, you end up with an inch extra hanging out the end of the clamshell that it just didn't match up. You're matching intermediate points along the way. So that helps a little bit for that one clam to fit perfectly inside of the convex curve to fit inside of the concave curve, if that makes any sense at all.
Okay.
So it really helps, and it also allows you to be able to utilize the bias stretch along those curves. All curves have that bias stretch that we're all used to as quilters, we're familiar with. But you utilize the bias stretch to make that length between the two tabs fit together. And if you watch the video, it's a lot, and it goes together a lot quicker and easier than people imagine. So I invite people to download the templates, cut out a few, play around with it, and I think you'll surprise yourself.
Yeah, I think the big size is probably a help for...
Yeah, the 12-inch actually goes together easier, exactly, than the 8-inch. Yeah. And I had some crazy friends, I won't put names to it, who wanted me to make 4-inch and 6-inch templates, and I did. But I encourage people to go for the 8-inch and 12-inch.
Right. Those crazy people. Okay, so let's... I want to talk a little bit about fabric, because I adore the fabrics you put together. How do you approach selecting fabrics for a quilt?
You know, I keep a running tally of things that catch my eye. Mm-hmm. So I forever am snapping pictures of my iPhone, tearing pages out of magazines, and just keep a collection of things that catch my eye. And sometimes it's accidental pairings of fabric. So the quilt that was featured on your website, the Glam Clam, it's called Neon and Neutral, that a lot of people look at it and like, what made you put these fabrics together? And it literally was an accidental stacking of fabrics. I had a couple fabrics, and they were there, and I'm like, oh, my God, that looks awesome. I would have never deliberately thought, let's put these fabrics together. And so I keep my eye open for unusual combinations that just work that may not, you know, in the normal terms of color theory and the things that we're taught or the things that we see all the time. So it's just what feels good to me. I took a little bit of formal training in design to kind of keep my sanity while I was in engineering school, but I've not had a ton of formal training. Mm-hmm. But it's really about what feels, and that's when I invite people as they're exploring their own sense of color and their own sense of design, is find out what really resonates with you individually.
It's an excellent way to go. Just trust yourself.
Trust yourself, exactly.
Now, you have a new line of patterns coming out. Tell me about it. Excited.
So I've been working actually for the past year or so on it. I have to learn the Adobe Suite first. But I've been working on a new line of patterns. Some of them will be some quilts that you guys have seen in the past. It'll be some of my first couple of patterns. I kind of did a soft introduction of molehills, which is the quilt that I'll be teaching at big event. I think we'll mention it a little bit later on next year. Of course, there'll be lots of curves and bias tape applique and things like that. But Latifa Checker Studios is the brand, and it'll just be standard patterns for quilters, and a lot of them will be allow people to kind of push their comfort level on the curved piecing and other techniques that they may not necessarily be comfortable with. And the second line, which I'm really excited about, is called Quilt Cadets, and it's a line to teach kids how to quilt through sewing projects. So, so that the mothers and grandmothers who want to be able to have a tool to introduce their love to the little people in their life in a way that the younger generations will actually be attracted to. So they're really fun, whimsical patterns. They're really clearly written, very visual patterns, and I'm really excited about that. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Few weeks we'll
and they can subscribe, right? I want you to get this in because we're almost done. We're almost out of time. Which site should they go to? Because I know you're getting a new one.
Yeah, my new site will be Latifa Checker Studios. You can always Google The Quilt Engineer and find me online. And I'm on Instagram and a little bit on Twitter and on Facebook as well.
Oh, this has been so fun. You are a huge inspiration.
Thank you so much, Pat. Thanks for having me on. And also thanks so much for your work in creating community within our quilt world as well. It's really important, and you do a really stellar job at doing that.
Oh, thank you. You're sweet. I can't wait to see you again.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.
Yeah. So everybody needs to go out and visit Latifa. You can just go right today to The Quilt Engineer, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. This is a fun show because I'm getting to talk to all kinds of favorite people. They're all favorite people, but I have some connections with the next lady who we started out as quilt designers probably about the same time. And when that happens, when you go to the trade show and you meet people who are doing their first booths and releasing their first work, you just build this connection over time. And over the years, we always run into each other. And so I am so excited that Terry Dagenkolb of the Whimsicals Design is here for the rest of the show to chat with me about her work and tips, and we're just going to have a fantastic time. Terry, I am so glad you are here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's fun to be here, too.
You know,
cracking, but it's good.
Yeah, I told you, no nerves. Yes.
I know.
So, Terry, give me the backstory. Tell me the backstory. How did you actually discover quilt making?
Actually, you know, I grew up always making things, always sewing. It was my mom, that's what we did when we were younger, out in the middle of nowhere. That's kind of, it filled our time. And so mom started quilting actually a couple years before I did. And it just, you know, once I saw what she was doing, and it just kind of like fed that whole creative thing of being able to make something of my own, to put my own little voice and my own little spin on it. And so, yeah, really it was mom and all of my background of always having to make something, be in the process of doing something.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to do, yeah. Latifah was sharing that she actually, they sort of had to make their clothes because there was a whole lot of kids in the family, and that was just, you know, if they wanted something new, which is actually what my mom did, was sewed for that reason. Did you have that same feeling? That
exactly, you yes. I did 4-H for 10 years. I did clothing. I remember my first pair of pants was those weird ones that kind of were like a big, huge diaper that kind of wrapped around and like, had this little tie string on both sides. I made those in second grade, when I was in second grade. So, yeah, I made my own prom dress. I made a ski suit 1 year, down ski suit for 4-H. It was just, yeah. So I have a lot of background just in sewing and garment construction.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't make garments anymore.
No. No, quilts are a lot easier.
Quilts now.
Yeah, I think quilts are easier.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Do you still have your first quilt that you made? I think you, did you tell me you gave it to somebody?
I did. My very, very first quilt I made, I gave to my sister-in-law, and that was in 1988, I believe. I think it was then. I mean, and it was a very simple quilt, but I was just kind of testing the waters, and so I gave it away. But I do have some of my earlier ones. They're just like nothing like what I make now.
Right. So, you know, I always find fascinating. You go back and you look at your first ones. And I always found, like, when I first started quilting, I tell people I had like no personality. Like if the store had a model, I just made it. You know, I made the same thing. Because it takes a while to figure out what you like to make.
Yeah. You know, because for me, it's a lot about just like picking and choosing and putting my own little, you know, my own little personality in it. But yeah, when mm-hmm. you're first starting, it is really hard to have that confidence to be able to do that. So,
and you don't even know what you like to make in the beginning.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Let's talk about how you started your business. You started it about the same time I did, like 97, 98, right?
Actually, I had to look back at it yesterday to make sure that my first pattern I did in 1997. I started it. I had just randomly up and quit my job because I lost a babysitter, and I had two young kids at home. One starting. It was starting probably. He was just around in kindergarten in that age. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, my husband came home and I said, oh, guess what? I quit my job thing. Like, so you have to find some way to make some money. So, so it was my mom and dad. They kind of encouraged me. You know, mom actually is, you know, like I said, she's the one that kind of got me quilting. And so, you know, we would go to stores and these little craft fairs, and we'd look at each other and go, you know, we could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first started, it was my mom and dad and I. Now, it has kind of, like, they have since retired again because it was their after-retirement job.
Right. That was their second job.
Mm-hmm, you're right.
Oh, gosh. Do you remember taking your first things to the first show? Do you know, how many pieces? Do you even know? Did you have a full booth?
I remember that first year. The first year, I think I actually did like 12 or...
Wow.
I did upwards of 12 patterns, and that's what I took to the first show that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, but they were all... Most of them were all little small projects. You know, I think I shared with you how much my style and my tastes and everything have changed.
Right.
Because it's been how many years. You can't expect to do the same thing over and over, you know, for that many years and not have it grow old. And then you know, I change too. And like my, you know, what I'm able to do and what challenges me has changed kind of what I do. And how I create things as well. It is
amazing what, and we have different fabrics available than what was in the late 90s, you know.
I know. Let's see. That was that 17 years ago? I'm horrible with math, so I think that's 17 years.
It's
and
crazy.
It's changed a lot.
It has changed a lot. Let's first, I'm going to talk a little bit about how you got started with fabric, because I think that always is, so many of us as pattern designers end up also having fabric lines. How did that happen for you?
Actually, it was one of the buyers from one of the distributors actually recommended me to, it was at that time when I first started doing fabric was A.E. Nathan. And that was, I think, 13 years ago. Mm. 13 years ago. So it's been, it was not too long after I started, but it was, and that, it was more or less being in the, I guess in my mind, I always just look at it as being at the right place at the right time and being able to fill the need that they were looking for. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I could just kind of happened into it. I went out looking for it.
right. Yeah, I know. It's like now there's more, I think, than when we started, there were less designers that had fabric lines.
It is so, the whole quilting market has changed dramatically in the amount of time that I've been in it, and you as well, and I'm sure you see it too. I mean, that, you know, when we first started, I remember going to Quilt Market, and they were just, like, it seemed huge to me, but when I look at the number of people who did what we did, doing the, our own individual patterns and trying to make a go of it, it was so much smaller than what it is now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And everybody, you know, and then, you know, the whole fabric thing is a whole nother thing all in itself as well. So, yeah, it is way different.
Tell me how how you go about designing a fabric line now, you know, versus, you know, what you did when you started, because we all change enormously over those many years as to how we approach designing. So what do you do now when you're getting ready to do a fabric line?
You know, I don't have a set formula. I kind of let, my biggest stumbling block is looking at the blank sheet of paper and trying to come up with a first idea, because I try, you know, everything I do is from scratch, and I do go out and I admit, I go out and I go shopping, and I look at the trends that are in the stores, and I look at the colors and think, okay, so what inspires me, what makes me happy, what makes me feel good, what catches my eye, and I kind of go kind of from there. And, you know, when I first started doing fabric, I did it a lot of it on, I would just paint it with the paintbrush and paint, and I'm not a trained artist at all, so it was you know, a little bit rough. Now over the years I've learned how to use Photoshop pretty extensively, so the majority of my fabric now is done using all of the Adobe suite with the Illustrator and Photoshop, and I paint basically on my computer. It's all digital painting.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what a majority of us do, because most of us are quilt makers. We're not artists. We're artists in that way, but we're not painters or people who
sketch. We're not fine artists, right.
Right. You know, it's a different kind of work.
It is.
When you do a line, do you start sort of with a topic? Do you say, okay, I'm going to have, I know one of your lines has bicycles on it, which are just so adorable.
I've got that sitting right in front of me.
Oh my gosh.
Fabrics. It's one of my favorite ones.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know why, because I don't ride a bike, but I just like it.
It's the image of the bike. It is just so cute. Well, tell me a little bit about that fabric line and the name of it. You're also with Red Rooster now.
Yes, I am with Red Rooster now. Sorry, I should have said that. Yeah, I switched. I've been with Red Rooster for almost it's coming up on 10 years now. That line, actually, you know, a lot of times we kind of work together. I work with Red Rooster to come up with a theme, an idea of and mostly it's like I take like a little thought that's randomly bouncing around in my head as an overall theme, and I try to build off of that. And, mm-hmm. you know, the bicycles you're talking about was from a line called Around Town. And, you know, being from a small town, I have a lot of doodles. I'm a doodler. Mm-hmm. So I just doodle a lot of things just on little pieces of random scraps of paper. And I live in a small town now as well. So I went in downtown and I walked around and looked at all the shapes of the buildings and what buildings were there. And mm-hmm. that's where Around Town came from. I started with the buildings, and then what do you see when you're going around town? Mm-hmm. You see the dogs, you see people on bikes, you see mm-hmm. there's a city park, and just like the different, whole different aspects of it, trying to make it a whole scene, a whole, you know, something that all gels together. So, I mean, that's kind of a thought process, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good one. I mean, that's, you know, everybody's is a little different. And I think that's really great that you actually go out. But that one is perfect. You can actually go to a small town because you are near one. And
I'm right there. Right?
Yeah, you're right there. I would have a harder time. I live right outside Washington, D.C., so my town is large.
Yeah, I don't think he probably has a little quaintness that ours does.
Yeah, we have little pockets of it, but you have to go a ways. So when you design the fabric, how do you go about deciding colors? I know that you said you sort of look to see, you know, you want to be on true to yourself, but you also want to be fresh. And so what do you collect color
that
swatches,
is,
like paint swatches?
You
or?
Know that, sorry.
No,
I
go
would
ahead.
Say that is one of the biggest challenges for me is that I, when I started several years ago, I did more of really more dark, primitive, really homey type of mm-hmm. feeling of fabrics. And yeah, mine still has kind of that homey feel, but I'm at a different point in my life now. Mm-hmm. And like we said, trends and styles have changed. Mm-hmm. So when I go out, what I'm actually really drawn to are not the really bright colors, but things that have more life to them,
mm-hmm.
something that makes me feel happy. And so when I'm doing a fabric line, I try to bring some of those colors in, and I've tried over the years, over the past several years, to kind of brighten things and
mm-hmm.
and draw into different, you know, branch out and to try a couple different colors. I've never gone really wild, but you know, the one thing that I've that Red Reese
hey,
has tried, and we've both worked together on this, is trying to make it
hold
so
the,
that
hold the thought. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Not available.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
What other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am talking to Terry Degenkolb of Whimsical Quilts. So, Terry, let's go a little bit more on the fabric in the colors, because I think it's fascinating. I started out with those warm sort of homey colors and have gone sort of even, you know, much brighter than what you're working with. I love that you have like a lot of sort of gray undertones, but they're really sort of give me a little bit of that Japanese feel to your fabrics. Do you see that?
Yes, actually, I do, and I tend towards those. That's where I find like comfort is in those colors, mm-hmm. And that's probably why they tend to that. But I get tired of working with the same colors over and over mm-hmm. and over. So I have been trying to change and brighten and deal with the market the way that it is now, and. Mm-hmm. I think some of it is that I'm at a completely different place in my life mm-hmm. right now, with my kids being gone. And so I'm looking for something that is maybe brighter, has mm-hmm. a little bit more pizzazz to it, something that
right.
is, it kind of makes a difference.
Now, do your fabric lines also have a panel? Do you do that for every line or just some of them?
I do a lot of panels, actually a lot of the secondary designs, the complementary prints that go with the line come from the panel. And I find it sometimes, I say most of the times, I find it easier to work, do a whole complete drawing that is the panel and then go from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But not all of them do. No. The problem is that once you get the panel and you get the fabric, then I have to try to come up with something to make with that.
Right, right.
Which can be a challenge over and over and over and right. over again. Right?
It is. But they're very fun. A lot of people like them for making quick projects. So they...
Yeah, right. You're right.
They can use them. I thought we might talk a little bit about fabric storage, because for those of us who have been doing this a long time as a business, we have to figure out what to do with everything.
Is a problem, isn't it?
Do you have like a separate house now?
House?
The fabric house. Do you have to build that in the backyard?
The joke here is that my business is oozed from like a little corner into being, oozed out of this room into another room and then another room down there. And so I don't really have everything in one spot. I do have the room that I work in it used to be a dining room, a living room, actually. And mm-hmm. I have the small pieces of my fabric and then fabrics that I go out and buy, because I do love to have the variety of having other people's fabrics to work with
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
As for the fabric, that I design, I have another, it's a converted bedroom. I mean, it's now we call it the shipping room. But
yeah.
I roll it around foam core boards. I've cut foam core boards to be about the size of a bolt of, the bolts that the fabric come on. They're mm-hmm. much thinner than the bolts that you get, the leftover bolts you can get from the mm-hmm. store. And it's really easy to have them. I've got them on bookshelves. They're all lined up on a bookshelf in that room. So if I need yardage, I can go down and get a big piece of it. But yeah,
that's I never had thought about foam core. Are you doing it like the whole length of a bolt, a regular bolt, or are you doing short ones?
Well, when I get my fabric, it's on rolls. It's on the and mm-hmm. so it's basically like it's flat and just rolled mm-hmm. on. Rolled on a tube, so it's a 45-inch tube. So now I take it off, and my mom and dad a lot of times come and help me. Sometimes Tom, my husband, helps me, and we take it all off, fold it in half. And so mm-hmm. I've taken, you can get a 36-inch. I figured out how to take a 36-inch, 36 by 40? All I have is like a little small piece left over of a foam core board, and I cut them 8 inches. By 22 inches, and I can get 4 out of one piece of foam core that I get at Hobby Lobby.
Wonderful!
It's a lot thinner, so it is. It's the same size as what you would get. What mm-hmm. you see when you go into the store.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same size, but it's just a lot thinner because it's only a quarter of an inch thick versus an inch plus this right. from one of the bolts from the stores. Takes up a lot less space. And when you have a lot of fabric.
Yeah, right.
A big thing.
I know. Yeah. We always we have to be creative on how we just like every other quilter has to.
Yes, you're right.
There, now they're all gonna have a whole run on foam core board now tonight after the show. So tell me, you like applique, and I've had everybody on the show today likes applique. Yay! Your favorite method?
I use freezer paper on the back of the fabric. So I push, you know, I iron the shiny side of the freezer paper to the back of the fabric, and then I just actually spray the, you know, before I turn it over to press it, I just spray the front of the fabric with starch. Turn it over and use my iron to just kind of, you know, fold the fabric along the edge of the freezer paper. And then I just peel the freezer paper off and I can baste it. I typically hand baste it down onto the fabric. And then if I have time, I really love to do the hand stitching. I don't always have time to do that, but it's, I don't know, by basting it down, it makes it portable. I don't get stuck with pins. I'm not losing pins in the couch or in the car. And so, yeah, that's my favorite way. If I have to use freezer, or if I have to use fusible web, I usually cut the inside part of the fusible web out.
Right.
So it makes it that the piece is still soft and pliable when it's all stitched down.
That's my favorite for fusible, too, to window it so that it's it's very soft. You also told me that you were playing around with paint sticks. What are you doing with those?
I love the paint sticks. How many of them? I'm sure there's a lot of people that have grew up doing the stenciling on the walls in the 80s. And it's the same basic concept, the same basic paint. It's oil-based paint that looks like a big piece of chalk, and I cut stencils out of freezer paper, press, you know, the freezer paper, then you can press it to the right side of the fabric after you've cut the portion that you want to paint. You just cut away the portion that you want to paint, press it onto the right side of the fabric, and then it sticks there, and I just use the stencil brushes, same brushes we used on the wall, and, yeah, it's great because it's so much easier, actually, and quicker than doing applique. And you can get those really small details that you can't when you're trying to turn the edge of a piece of fabric under.
Oh, now, do you have to stabilize the background of the fabric so that it's firmer?
No, because like say if I'm going to use the paint sticks on an 8-inch square. I cut my freezer paper as an 8-inch square, trace the design, whatever I'm going to do, onto the freezer paper. And sometimes I have multiple, you know, you have multiple parts of it. You want one color out of one, just the same way that you would do on the wall. So you have, when you iron the freezer paper onto the fabric, that is what holds the fabric steady as you're painting it. Yeah.
So that's enough stabilizer.
So the freezer paper then really becomes the stabilizer, right?
How cool. So how many colors do you recommend somebody start with? Do they need like 6 different colors? Is that like a good number if they've never bought them before?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I do find that I use the same basic colors over and over. You can mix a lot of colors because, you're doing it with a brush. So put 2 different colors on your palette that you're working with, mix them together, and you know you can get a green. You can get you can make a lot of the colors that you need. But I recommend it. I always shade the edge with black to kind of give it some dimension, like a really really small right along the edge, and or like a burnt umber or you know some dark shade like that.
So, that's a very good tip. So that sort of keeps the shape more visible.
Right, that it makes the edge, you know, so when you're going in, because they do, it seems like it's always darker when I'm doing it, and when I peel the freezer paper off, I'm like, oh, darn, I should have made that darker. So that's why I started going along the edge, only along, like if I'm doing a word, I will go along one edge, just basically it's just kind of shading, you know, how you would if you would sort of offset your text, you know, to the back, and that's kind of what I'm creating by doing black with a really thin, really small brush right along one edge.
Yeah. So I love that. I've not tried that. So today I have like all these new things I have to try from each of you that I've talked to. Like I have a whole list. I can't ever die, you know, because I have too many things to try. So when you go to a show, Terry, what is it that attracts you personally when you go to a show? What quilt? Type of quilt?
What quilt? Oh, you know, I can't say that there's any one specific style of quilt. I mean, believe it or not, like when I look at some of the more what they call modern quilts where they've taken a traditional block, and it's the white space, I think, that I like on those type of quilts. I'm drawn to those, but I'm also drawn to ones that are very complex and complicated, and like, how did they do that? And how do they have the patience to do that? You know, I mean, it just amazes me when I look at some of those. So, you know, there's a lot of just different styles. It's whatever kind of hits me at the time.
Yeah, it is a hard thing to think about because when we go in, it's sometimes actually a specific quilt and not a particular style that grabs
grabs
your attention. Yeah, it's like that quilt.
So the ones that I go, how on earth did they do that?
Right. Yeah. That's the one. That's the one we want to know. Well, Terry, this has been so much fun. I'm so glad that you were able to come on the show.
I'm glad I could. I'm glad I could do this. This has been, it's fun. It's cool.
Oh, good. Well, everybody has to visit Terry out at whimsicalquilts.com. And Terry, I'll see you soon.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Bye. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit American Patchwork at allpeoplequilt.com. Sign up for their newsletter. You can visit me at patsloan.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter. Check with all of our guests from today. Next week, I'll be back, and I have a whole new show with more fantastic people and new things to learn. It's just been so fun being here chatting today. I hope that you go out and try something new, and we'll see you next week.
Visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for